Good afternoon once again. Remember, and we are getting to a second session, which is the briefing by the Department on the SPLAM, Special Planning and Land Use Management Bill. I'm going to head over to Nevro and
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as indicated, we'll brief the committee on the spatial land and land, spatial planning and land use bill, management bill. Chair, just to indicate, and Anton will elaborate on it. Anton Arnson, the Chief Director for Human Settlement Planning, has been the link person with land affairs in relation to the drafting, the consultation, and then myself, together with Dr. Sokopo, have also been part of the process in relation to the economic cluster, because the bill gets processed through the economic cluster. So we've been part of that process. We also are aware of the fact that it has been introduced into Parliament. Just to indicate to you, the Data General for Rural Development Land Reform, DG Shabane, last week had requested a meeting with the department to discuss the policy, some of the policy perspectives on the bill. We couldn't make the meeting. We've asked to reschedule because of that. But Anton will take you through that. But I think what we want to be able to do is with the policy-related implications of some of the bill in relation to human settlements. But what I think I just want to put the committee's mind at ease that there's a very close relationship between the department, particularly the two DGs, but also at the deputy director general level, and also at an old confirm at a chief director level. What's it, Sunday? Who is the chief director responsible at? So Leona Archery, who is the sort of EDG responsible for that. We're working together with them on the 23 district. We sit on the outcome 8 reporting. But Anton will just take you through the, and then we can take other comments and questions. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson and members, good afternoon again. This was while an interesting and also difficult presentation to put together, because what we did not want to do is go through the chapter and verse of the bill. And you, for a couple of reasons, it's tedious, but also many of you would have had sight of the bill even in previous iterations or the latest version, which I think was March this year. So what I've attempted to do was sort of put together very quickly a snapshot of where this thing comes from, some of the history, but also give you, with respect, a sort of a layman's synopsis or observation of what are the key things or aspects that this all seeks to address. And then tying up with what Neville has just said, just a few concluding slides about what we believe the key impacts of the bill will be on the work of not only the department but human settlement sector. Maybe be useful just to correct a few things that, around the bill that may have been said this morning. The Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Bill has always been under the custodianship or auspices of the Department of Rural Affairs, Rural Development and Land Reform, the erstwhile Department of Land Affairs. Right? They have always been responsible for the SPLAM, as well as the what we could call it now the previous iteration, i.e. the Development Facilitation Act. It may be useful to even at this early point, talk about can we call it the location of planning law, planning legislation, and planning policy. One, it's the most appropriate location. Two, the, can we call it the dispersed nature of planning law and planning legislation within government, and we can use, be very specific on this one. While spatial planning and lands management resides within rural development and land reform, you also have another piece of very specific, very key legislation related to this, i.e. the Municipal System, sorry, Municipal Structures Act. Of 2000. Why that is important? Well, it relates to the aspect of local government and their obligation to put together an IDP. I'll get into that in a few minutes, but I think it's possibly right at the outset, you know, one of the issues, the chair indicated that there may be a joint session with rural development. One of the issues that may in fact be raised, both with rural development and with COCTA, it's a discussion which has been ongoing, and every so often rears its head, and I think it may be useful to talk about that in future discussion. As Neville indicated again, just to confirm that we've in fact had the department has been actively involved in at various points in with the rural development on this piece of legislation, and again it will transpire exactly why this is an important piece for us. We've been part of the consultation process from 2008. There's been a technical task team to which we've been party that has been escalated to an IMC involving rural development, COCTA, ourselves, and a few other departments. You will know that in 2010, I think it was, the presidency has stepped in to resuscitate this piece of legislation. And as things stand now, rural development is again being charged with moving this piece forward and moving with very quickly. Our last engagement, formal engagement with this, the Department of Rural Development and the Presidency made a formal presentation to our MINTOP. That's the Minister's meeting with all of his senior managers toward the end of last year, and then again when rural development started formal consultations after it had resubmitted this piece, we've again submitted our comments for their consideration. So this is around about a 20-slide presentation, and I should be able to go through it fairly quickly. I thought, just by way of introduction, a few definitional issues. So we will use the term land use management and spatial planning during the course of the presentation, just to get a common understanding or definition of these important ones. Secondly, a quick snapshot of where this comes from, why it is considered important, and then thirdly, the latest version. Just extract some of the key aspects around what is the purpose of this piece of legislation, what it seeks to achieve, and then also what are the various roles and responsibilities for all three spheres of government. And then lastly, as I've indicated, a few slides on the impact on the human settlement sector and our program. In its simplest term, land use management, for us to understand that land gets used in various ways. And very often, there are competing interests for land. So just by way of example, very simply, pieces of land that very often we would identify for affordable housing, could very easily also be considered key or crucial for industry, for commerce, etc., etc. So in Pretoria, you've got Roslyn, you've got all of the industry there, you've got Shoshanguve, which is expanding south toward Pretoria. At some point, there's going to be competing interest for vacant parcels of land that could be used potentially for both industry, commerce, and for housing. And what land use management, therefore, really deals with how best to make use of that land, taking into consideration issues of efficiency, of equity, etc., etc. And it deals with it, or attempts to deal with it in a mutually inclusive and an integrated manner. Spatial planning, on the other hand, is a bit more visionary in its approach. So where land use management is far more regulatory in what can or should not be used, or how land should not be used, spatial planning casts a vision for how a space is to be developed, and so on and so forth. So, and I raise these two because they can never be seen as mutually exclusive. The one will always seek to support the other. I may be running ahead of the presentation, but so just by way of example, a municipality will cast vision and will cast its developmental agenda by way of its IDP, that's the spatial plan. How that is given traction to would be by way of land use management, and I'll talk through how the instruments in during the course of the next few slides. All right, very quickly, and again, I've tried to put the history of planning for the past 20, 30 years in one slide, and obviously it's not possible, but here goes. Much has already been written about inefficiency and inequity prior to 1994, right? And I've tried to boil it down into these three areas around space, economy, and the environment. We know about the apartheid city. We know about segregated settlements. Very little other than spatial segregation of race and class had been done in terms of planning law prior to 94. So one of the, we could call it unintended, or one of the consequences of that has then also been the uncertainty of land markets, because how does a city begin to grow? Where should investment occur? And that may, that also, the fact that there's been very little in terms of land regulation also begins to impede on investment, when, where, and how. And then finally, the issue of the environment. And again, there are other pieces of legislation that have taken the lead almost, and I refer to EIAs, etc., etc., where development should not occur. A lot of that has happened in the absence of there being very relevant and up-to-date planning law and planning policy. So, just very quickly, putting all of those differently, the need, therefore, for integration of policies, land use management processes, and hence more efficient human settlement delivery. Post-1994, I think in recognition of what we've just said in the past two slides, there's been a series of policy and legislative pieces that government has put out. These, in our view, and the list that is on here, certainly is not exhaustive. But these are the three important pieces that have attempted to shape and to guide municipalities and provinces in respect of planning legislation and policy. The first is the Development Facilitation Act. Always seen as an interim piece, and that there would in fact be a more substantial one. The second was the Green Paper on Planning put out by the then Department of Land Affairs. And then thirdly, the Municipal Systems Act of 2000 by the then DPLG, now Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. And the Municipal Systems Act introduced the obligation on municipalities to prepare integrated development plans and spatial development frameworks. I will come back to this aspect of the relationship between IDPs and spatial development framework. I will come back to that. It's in fact a very, very important one for us as a department. In 2010, the Development Facilitation Act made turn in the Constitutional Court. And again, this I'm sure that the committee had been briefed previously on this, so I'm not going to get into the history and the detail of that. Safe to say that the ruling by the Constitutional Court in June of 2010 is that municipal planning remains the exclusive competence of local government. Right? That is a very important point. Not in any way making a little of the crucial role that provincial and national government have to play in respect of planning, and particularly if I bring it down to what we do as a national department, identifying national priorities and for provinces to do similar. When it comes to implementing those priorities at the local level, in local space, local government space, it remains that the principal developmental agent, the Concord ruling, indicates very clearly that remains the space of local government.
Yeah. So, Chair, I'll just add a couple of things. I think the one important thing we need to be able to be careful and understand and when the committee members are processing and the board comes. One of the issues we need to understand is that notwithstanding this, it also results in some of the questions we have to ask ourselves around spatial inclusion, So the municipalities, and that was one of the reasons why you put the DFA in, and it was a holding piece of legislation, is because the transformational nature of our land use management and spatial planning processes, particularly at the municipal level, is not achieving the objectives. So going forward, we must be very careful that at a national sphere, this is going to be a tension that's going to play itself out in relation to slum. So I think we must not be blindfolded, or we must not fool ourselves that once the slum comes into place, there are going to be major interest and class battles in the courts around the application, because slum is a groundbreaking piece of legislation in terms of spatial a reconfiguration. And one of the problems is you're going to have this kind of tension. So you're going to have this kind of tensions between ourselves as national, you're going to have tensions between ourselves and province, and you're going to have the tensions that exist between municipalities and national, as we do at the moment. So for example, around prioritization, those things will play themselves out. So constitutionality may have been a victory for municipalities and the autonomy. The question we all ask is, was it a victory for transformation of the spatial? Because a lot of municipalities have not transformed their zones. They don't have consolidated town planning acts. They still have a whole inherited. I think Joburg's probably the only one that has consolidated its town planning scheme. You know, I don't think, it's interesting. I mean, remember Bowman and Cecilia might want to go. I don't think even Etiquini has got a Etiquini town planning scheme. You know, you still have Amkomas or whatever kind of things. And those are important aspects just for us to be able to understand how slowly we've implemented some of these things.
Thank you. So the next few slides just attempts to extract very quickly the purpose of this bill, and I've put them out in fair amount of detail for your own reading as well, not just in bullet points. I think importantly to provide a comprehensive system of spatial planning and land use management for the country. To ensure that the system of spatial planning and land use management promotes inclusion, promotes integration at various levels, not only from a social or a class level, but also economically and so on and so forth. It talks to the more efficient and the more sustainable use of land. Importantly, dealing both with urban and rural land. Right? And the bill does in certain instances differentiate between urban and rural land, but the obligations are no less for Category A municipalities as they would be for Category B2 or C municipalities. There is an equal obligation. Some of the development principles. Not dissimilar to what we are familiar with within the DFA, and I think very interestingly, a lot of what is in fact being said in the slum, you will in fact find some of them in fact being quoted chapter and verse from the DFA, and then also appearing in our old housing code as well as BMG. So already a lot of what is being said already begins to align a lot of what our pieces are saying, or key policy pieces are saying, already beginning to align themselves with the spatial planning and land use management bill. The SPLUM also talks about the determination of norms and standards. Very interestingly, the last point there, I'm going to zoom straight into that last bullet over there. When the bill, of course, because it's under the custodianship of rural development, when the bill refers to minister, it talks about the Minister of Rural Development. But very interestingly, the bill allows for any other minister to also request rural development to prescribe certain norms and standards. I've just cited some example there. So it is possible for us to request rural development to set certain norms and standards in respect of density, in respect of sprawl. SHRA, for example, talks of restructuring zones. The HDA talks about housing priority areas. Refer to that is the, thank you for that, Neville. Therefore, this specific clause, and we fought tooth and nail for it, but we at some point that clause was under threat of actually being watered down or removed. That one we're very pleased to see still remains there. So it allows for us in determining when we're talking about national priorities, we the Department of Human Settlements, our money and the way that money is used when it hits the ground needs to achieve specific outcomes. We now are able to make use of the spatial planning and able to make use of this legislation to give even further effect to, for example, how the HSDG is to be used within any municipal area. In addition to this piece of legislation, the Department of Rural Development is also preparing a number of supporting pieces. One of the more important ones there is the Guide for Spatial Development Frameworks, the third supplement over there. Spatial Development Framework, as well as the guidelines for municipal land use management. For that fourth subbullet there, the product of that would be what is referred to in the bill as land use schemes. All right? And that, in really, really simple terms, if you were to ask a municipality, so how do you plan to use land or stand so-and-so or earth so-and-so, the land use scheme would be the document that would be referred to, or you would be referred to extract that specific piece of information. the trick, of course, as with most pieces of legislation, is lies in its implementability. And you've run ahead of the presentation. One of the concerns and cautions, in fact, of this piece of legislation. And yet, in fact, is other than land use schemes is the big one. All 3 spheres of government must prepare an SDF. Now, when we talk about a national spatial development framework, this is the National Department of Rural Development and Land Reform that would take responsibility for that, and the requisite provincial departments. Of course, there would need to be consultation with other departments and with other spheres. Interestingly, SDS would be reviewed every 5 years or less, and it comes as no coincidence that it aligns itself with the development and the review of integrated development plans. I've in fact talked about this one, land use management. How this gets put down on paper would be by way of land use management schemes. The municipalities, in terms of this piece of legislation, are obliged to prepare this. Of course, I mean, this is the piece that Neville was alluding to. This would be the bone of contention, because once a land use scheme is approved, land owners, be they public or private, are I don't want to say bound, but mandated to use that piece of land as has been set out in this land use scheme. So there, of course, is going to be a whole lot of consultation, a whole lot of interest, a whole lot of stakeholders who have interest in various parcels of land, land owners, etc., etc. And probably land affairs, sorry, rural development, already gearing themselves to test, they're preparing themselves for contestations around this very important piece or product that is going to come out of this bill. The roles and responsibilities, national level, and here I've in some way, the National Department of Human Settlements may also have a responsibility, but by and large, rural development and land reform, support and monitor the capacity to implement the bill, to review national planning law and policies, and to similarly national norms and standards at provincial level. The compilation of provincial as well as regional spatial development frameworks. If I could just pause at this point. I've talked about spatial development frameworks at municipal level. The bill also talks about regional SDFs. So by way of example, where you have a pro program or project, if I could use the SIPs by way of example. It cuts across municipal areas, municipal spaces. In fact, it may cut across provinces. In those instances, you may have a national department or two provincial departments or two municipalities coming together to craft a spatial development framework for that specific area or for that specific project or program. In those instances, it rests with provinces to coordinate those pieces of work, provincial or regional spatial development frameworks. And it also rests with the province, of course, to make sure that where you have municipal spatial development frameworks, that those, in fact, are talking to one another. Just by way of example, the whole Gauteng city region is a very, very good case in point, where the Gauteng province will play a very, very critical role in bringing together the spatial development frameworks of three very, very important metropolitan municipalities. And then, of course, the bulk of the work resides with municipalities. The compilation of IDPs, of spatial development frameworks, of land use schemes, the regulating the use of land within their municipal space, and then just the converse of what I've said around provinces supporting the implementation of provincial and of regional spatial development frameworks. Three concluding slides. This list by no way should be considered exhaustive, but some of the issues that we believe will impact on human settlements. The first relates to the alignment of human settlement programs with the key tenets of this book. We've listed the three really key issues that are important for us as a department, but are equally important not only for this department but for the country. How that gets interpreted municipally and provincially is the area of divergence. And perhaps if I go to the following slide, it is better illustrated. Projects. If we're talking about sprawl, if we're talking about spatial form, we talk about density. We know what the housing code said a few years back. We know particularly what BNG had to say. But yet, if you look at aerial photographs, if you drive through cities, it's not saying the same thing. Yeah? The intent of the bill, the intent of social development frameworks is to begin not only to remedy, but to begin to govern how that happens. All right? So, whereas a Department of Human Settlements, we are able to exercise some control around how the HFDG is used. So we've attempted to say, if you're asking to use HFDG, one house, one plot. Now we're able to say, well, our policy says this, but the SDF for this municipality, in fact, confirms what we're saying. The density standards for any given space, if you get in particularly, shall we say, within the inner city, it needs to have a specific dwelling unit density. So you're essentially having a piece of legislation which supports and gives teeth to, for example, the HSDG the USDG, etc., etc. Right? Land and land assembly. If a parcel of land is targeted for acquisition, we're able to use the USDG, but we're able to say that it, or HSDG, depending on which institution we're talking about here, but we're able to then say, if you are going to use that, if you are going to use the grant for to acquire land and to assemble land and to add value, it gets strengthened, it gets confirmed by where that money is to be used within a municipal space. The second issue that needs to be raised here is, in some instances, you have provinces who act as developers or implementers of projects. There is going to have to be far more closer cooperation in terms of determining not only spending priorities, but where those projects are located. And I say this very guardedly, and I say it completely anecdotally, but it is commonly known that provinces have put money into municipal spaces, i.e. housing projects, where they have not been deemed a priority for the municipality. So and how that gets manifested, a house or a housing project gets put on the ground and there are no municipal services, there are no roads, there is no bulk infrastructure. That really is one of the ways in which that misalignment gets manifested. Here, we are saying, or the bill is beginning to suggest that municipalities and provinces, where the province or provincial department of human settlements is the implementer, there is going to have to be far more closer discussion and consensus around where, how, and when money gets put into those municipal spaces. The quid pro quo, the upshot for provinces or provincial departments is that by having been party to the crafting of spatial development frameworks, of IDPs, they have far more credible instruments at their disposal, the documents, which then begin to determine funding priorities. You're aware that one of the programs that as a department we have is the development of housing chapters of municipal IDPs. It appears as a line item in our business lens. The intent of that had always been for provinces to begin to get a far more better idea of what the housing need would be within any given municipality by way of an IDP. Now you've got that program which is managed by human settlements, and then you have spatial development frameworks and land use schemes. These items or these products, documents, begin to provide a far more comprehensive picture, both for municipalities and for provinces in determining what the housing need is and where and under what conditions funding can be used for housing and for human settlement. Members, I've talked about this last one around the setting of norms and standards and how the Minister of Human Settlements may request that minimum technical norms and standards could be prescribed under special circumstances. And I've used the example of density, housing typology, inclusionary housing, integrated settlements, restructuring zones, etc., etc.
Thanks, Chair. Just a couple of concluding before we, can sort of discuss. As a department, I think what we need to put down is the department supports the the contents of the bill, so we've consulted around it. I mean, it goes a long way in terms of giving us as the sector, as the Human Settlements Department, what we wanted. There's integration between our policies, our plans, our grant frameworks, our funding strategies. It allows us to be able to do that. I think, you know, just a point, when this thing went before the cluster committee, one of the ministers asked, is there someone from the Human Settlements Department here? Because there was a whole range of issues that were discussed, and they said, well, does the department support it? And the only thing we could say, because we've been part of that process, was that, yes, Minister, this, we support this bill. And I think the point here is, you know, we've alerted rural development that we've just got to get this thing right in terms of its reading, in terms of its constitutionality, in terms of the way that it gets raised, so that we minimize some of the opposition and some of the objections that will come, which we must be wise to that fact, that, you know, there will be class interests, there will be cultural interests, and there will be a whole range of other socioeconomic interests that will push back against us. The last important point is that this is a collective responsibility of all the sectoral departments. You know, and I think the important thing is this bill is not owned by rural development and land reform. It's something that we're all going to have to own and make sure that we achieve our sectoral but also the collective developmental objectives. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Neville. Can you just raise comments or questions for clarity seeking? Honourable Bowman, then Mugabe.
Yes. I think with a bill that is so broad, and you know, the land issues are sort of paramount to how we move forward. And I mean, we've been saying that we just continued in the old apartheid way of doing things. So this obviously begins to change that. But I would think that because this is, I think this impacts quite largely on us, would we, this is my question, all these departments can't necessarily get together because rural development are going to ultimately have responsibility for this. But I would think that, you know, if we're going to be that involved, I think we need to properly work through the bill ourselves as a committee, so that we are able to make a decent contribution. And I like to think that the legislation that we have processed through this portfolio, we've taken it seriously. And I would not like to see us just say that, yes, you know, this is fine, now that's the last we're going to see of it today. I would like us to see us actually dealing with it. And I think, you know, there are a lot of issues around this also that people don't, you know, these EIAs, and understanding the environmental issues just on their own. And I mean, we've come across it, you know, people laugh about the bullfrogs and the wetlands, and you know, you can't do this and you've got to be careful of that. But if we don't take this seriously, then we are impacting on our own living, you know, our daily lives. So I think it's going to be very important for us to look at this and to perhaps not in the great detail that the other, you know, with public hearings and all, but I definitely think we need to work through it.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. I've just been wondering whether this bill, the motivation for this bill, has anything to do with the National Development Plan that the National Development Commission has put up, and is it helping us, for instance, move towards what the National Development Plan is also trying to solve, because obviously it's going to take a very, very long time to reach and achieve all the objectives. As you say yourself, they are expecting some tension, some resistance here and there. Obviously, land is a very sensitive issue, particularly, I think, in a country like ours. And one thing, for instance, of privately owned land, think of the so-called traditional land, you think of almost everything. So, I think definitely I also agree that we should expect those tensions, and how we manage them will be very interesting. I'm not sure if the bill itself does, for instance, look into such issues as to how such tensions can be overcome. And then on the prescription by any minister in terms of this bill, I'm just wondering whether we're going to end up with duplications or conflicts, maybe more of conflicts than duplications, if any minister is going to prescribe, supposing for instance there's a conflict of interest with another department that is already prescribed, how are these going to be solved? Is the bill helping us to solve such issues? And also, coming to the Human Settlements Department itself, we already have plans, not only for this year, not for next year, but maybe up to 2015 or something like that, or maybe even beyond. How is this going to impact? How do you see it impacting on the plans that we already have, now that it's going to be a collective responsibility for the various sectors, various departments, you know, on how to use land, make use of land? Is it going to affect any of your projects? Is it going to result in some delays in your plans? Something like that. Yeah. And then lastly, Chairperson, I don't know why I'm thinking of this. Maybe I think again, this discussion of land use, a collective responsibility of land use, something that is very, very important. As South Africa, how can I put this? Can I put it this way? I'm probably not even expecting an answer on this one, but just for us, I'm throwing it, you know, food for thought. South Africa and nationalization of land. Is it something that we ever dream of? The government nationalizing the land. You see, Zambia did it in 1985. There were already people there. People owned farms, people owned a property, and so on and so forth. In other words, the land was already being used, had been used previously. But a very serious decision was taken to nationalize the land. What did that mean? It meant that you cannot sell land in Zambia. Land belongs to the state, belongs to the government. But you can lease it for as many years, I suppose, as can be decided. In other words, you want to start an industry, you want land. You lease that land, but it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the state. It's open for anyone to use that land after maybe the end of your lease. But here at home, we know, for instance, one of the reasons why the so-called, it doesn't even belong to Human Settlements, the so-called willing buyer, willing seller principle, it has not worked because of the resistance that we have come across, precisely because some people own the land, belongs to them. So how are we going to deal with this, for example? Is the deal helping us, for instance? As you say, we shall have collective responsibility over the land. Is the deal helping us, for instance, to try and overcome that kind of resistance, but you are definitely going to get in trying to implement this year. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to know, this bill is going to be owned by, is it going to be owned by Rural Development? Okay, and we are going to be just part of it in the way of contributing whatever we want to contribute. And if there is a privately owned land, maybe we need that land for building houses. Who's going to negotiate? Who's going to go and negotiate because of this bill? There is going to be some competing interest. Who's competing? How are we going to be competing? Because we know that the bill is going to be Rural Development is going to be in charge. Are we going to be competing when it comes to land? That, let's say, human segment needs land and others also need that land. How are we going to have this collective responsibility? Because at the end, the bill belongs to Rural Development. There is something that Honorable Bowman talked about, and what I was just speaking of, the land that we cannot use, mentioning that there are these frogs, big frogs, what is it called, bullfrogs. In that case, are we going to tell the Rural Development that we need that area, that land, need that land? Then Rural Development have to see to it that we get that land. What is SBA going to do for us? Then there is something in one of the slides that I wanted. I'll come back for that one. I'll come back for the time.
Okay. Thank you very much, remember. Normal, I think the issue that has been raised by women on the whether we need to look at the bill itself. Why I'm raising that, I just came across a clause that says a definition, around the definition. The inclusionary housing has been cut off. I've got a copy. So that is why I'm saying, I don't know whether it has been cut off and then you came back again and discussed these issues, as you are saying, the DGs met on last week. They wanted to meet. They have not yet. So that is why I'm saying it is very critical that you are closely monitoring. Because now at the end of the day, you'll find that the policies of human settlements can become compromised because people don't understand those policies, the background of those policies. So the version I've got now is kind of inclusion. So I may not know all of them, but I took note of that. So it is crucial that you are closely monitoring, which is, don't find yourself some of our policies being compromised. I don't have a problem with the norms and standards, because nobody can develop norms and standards for human settlement development other than the department. As long as there is that opportunity, because it's going to be discussed between Rural Development and Human Settlement and the other departments that are also part being affected. But I want to know from the bill itself, I would appreciate if the core departments or core deliverables can be mentioned in the bill. Because I once came across with the document where the core departments were listed. But there were other people who were saying who attended the economic transformation meeting. So there were people who were saying there's no need to list it. But I said, no. Now I want to see human settlements in this bill being part of the departments that are listed. Because you cannot just think that you are going to be part of that, whereas in the bill you are not appearing as a person who's going to play a critical role. So I don't know, because I haven't seen that. But I'm not saying he's not there. Then coming to but I lay in the Bible now, Altos has even written very well in page 8, where we are saying, yes, let us agree that the planning is going to be to be undertaken at the municipal level. Let's agree. But the problem is, are we ready for that? That's the main question. We pass the bill today. You pass the bill today. Are you ready as government to withstand the chaos that is going to happen? Whereas there is a chaos now. Municipalities, they are resisting its development from the national department. Secondly, this IDP process, we still maintain if it is not credible, not credible activities. We understand that you are having developing housing chapters, you have been singing that for quite a long time, and our bone of contention is that those IDPs are not accurate. Not accurate. I can set an example of my ward. My ward as a member of parliament. That IDP is not accurate. Because the process that are followed, people just, they don't announce those IDP meetings deliberately. How are you going to because it's done deliberately. That is why it's important to the bill itself. There is a provision for the regulations to make sure that the national department, provincial department, and the local government, during the period of IDP processes, you must go down, all of you. I will be certain if there will be a clause that relates to that. If it is not, I'm sorry. Because now I'm talking about something that is happening currently. And the bill is supposed to be passed tomorrow. What are we going to do? And we are going to have a serious problem. That is why I'm saying, make sure that there is a clause. Because you can't fix it now to your brain regulation, whereas it is not indicated in the bill itself. That these 3 years of government must not just be exactly the Nazarites have been taking for granted. There is a cooperation, there's intergovernment.
something that is not working even today. Those intergovernmental relations are not working. They're not working. Yes, I could say it between human settlements and the province and the municipality, they are working because we are able to foresight this committee. My question is, how many committees will be having that energy to do it? I mean, even rural development is that. I'm sorry to listen. That's the question. So, we must not take things for granted. When this bill is passed, talk about directive in the bill, do not, all of us on the ground, we must not go there on the day of the meeting. We must be visible, I mean the departments, the relevant departments must be visible during the preparational period. When you are announcing, coordinating those meetings, there must be officials from national, deployed from national, province and local, so that we are sure that each and every citizen knows about that process and the meeting dates. Now it's serious. Ever since 2006, my ward has never had an accurate IDP. I'm not lying. People just are being called in the corners because people don't want to be asked questions. That's the problem. Because the communities, they ask questions, Amunjo. People ask questions, you were here last year. We gave you our needs. What have you done? You never came back to us and say you are doing this, you are responding to this. Now you are coming again back to us to collect. And then now they decide to sideline people. And then if you happen to hear that there is a meeting, and then you just go there on your own, they will sideline you because they are not going to point you to participate in the meeting. This bill goes for us, set us. Let's make sure that all these things, we talk about them, so that we are able to address them. Let's not put things for granted. So that's what I'm saying. You must make sure that you are guilty, and we must be given an opportunity to sit together with rural development and speak about these things. I'm going to write a letter to the chairperson to say, well, we are ready now, but we need the bill itself now. Your understanding, the issues that you are raising, are they incorporated in this bill? So that we discuss it now. But we must know that time, and we don't have time. Time is against us. That bill is supposed to be passed before we go to another constituency period. So it's a period of grace. We could be what this week. We don't know what's going on. What is Ryan sitting there? Siman.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, I think we'll take, just to say, a couple of weeks ago, the Premier came to our ward, and there's a couple of informal settlements. So one of the residents in the informal settlement stood up and he said, EPU Askisa, you know. And he said, we're still waiting for Askisa. He came here the last time he spoke about this, was like a couple of years ago. But it actually demonstrates, and having worked at a local authority chair, I think we can share the point about it, is that the value of the IDP is something that we need to really reevaluate. Who's actually in charge? Because as officials, you have the ability, I think, Member Bowman, you will know. I mean, your budgets get changed during the kind of your reprioritization. There's no consultation. I think what we will do is, and Tom might want to comment on this, I think the point is that, yes, rural development are in charge of this. One of the things that we wanted to do was take some of these issues up. I'm not quite sure how Parliament is going to manage the processing of this bill, whether it's a joint special committee or whatever. But I think the points that you've raised are quite very important. I'm, I mean, there's some of the big issues that we're speaking about on our land and those kind of things. I mean, the important thing is that this bill speaks about the planning and the land use management, which is dependent on land ownership. You know, so who owns the land will determine whether or not there's contestation of this bill, because it's going to affect landowners, land use, and spatial planning. You know, that's the important thing. I think, you know, and I suppose, you know, being in government, you've got to temper your maturity and your rationality. Now, I'm not quite sure that's a good thing. You know, sometimes someone say, you know, you're not allowed to be a radical if you're a member of, if you're an official. You can't say certain things, but you've got to be able to do that. But I think what we want to be able to do, you know, what we can say, Chair, is that we understand fully well that if we want to be able to achieve the human settlements objectives in terms of what we want to achieve in terms of the National Development Plan, this bill, in terms of its foundation, is crucial. You know, so hence the fact that as the department, we're taking this thing quite seriously. Anton's been, I think, we charged with responsible. Now we've, you know, with the reconfiguration of the department, it's myself, Anton, together with Dr. Sokopo, that's busy managing this. So yes, this bill, in terms of how it gets passed, in terms of provisions, but more importantly, it's post-enactment management, which you've raised, is an issue that we, I think the way we configure it now as a department, we can watch this thing with a whole eye. I think we're well placed to manage our responsibilities and oversight about this well. But I think we'll raise the issue. I mean, we did raise the issue around the regulatory impact assessment that should be done for this bill. Because, you know, how does it link to NEMA, the environmental stuff? How does it link to the National Development Plan? And how does it impact on the green paper on land ownership, that rural developments? How does it impact on Municipal Systems Act? So there's a whole range of things I think we've, you know, the real work will start once this bill gets enacted. You know, the point about it, the easy part is taking the bill and getting the bill enacted and getting what we want in it. The issue is, which I don't want to be a prophet of doom, but I think we've just got to make sure that this is the one piece of legislation we can't allow not to succeed.
No, we all agree. We set the language, but the problem is, if those issues are not there in the legislation, they have in the legislation. It's very critical. Those little things, don't overlook them. Make sure that at least they are clearly defined. And they went in the APA, so that to avoid this, I know no officials there for the tendency, but law is fine. But when you sit together with officials, you must be honest to each other. When you are alone, you must be honest on the issues on the ground, so that you are able to come up with a product that is going to address these issues.
Thank you. Just to reflect on some of the comments and some very fair comments that have been made. The test of any piece of legislation or policy is in its ability to be implemented. Certainly as a department, we're not going to be naive to suggest that come January, municipalities are ready to run with this thing. I think the reality suggests something completely different. What we do know is that as we speak, rural development is in fact doing they crisscrossing the country, provinces and municipalities to determine readiness and the capacity within municipalities to actually do some of this work, and already beginning to suggest how capacity can be augmented to ensure that this bill and the products that need to be produced are in fact put out, and that you have credible pieces. Around the issue of where this piece of legislation resides and possible duplication, this bill talks to how, in its simplest terms, talks to how land is to be used. The process of acquisition, of assembly, of land, of adding value to that land, still resides within who is determined as the principal implementing agent. Now that could be a province, a provincial department of human settlements, it could be the local municipality, it could be an agency such as the HDA. So in essence, a spatial development framework, a plan or a map will show that this area is to be used for housing or mixed use or whatever the case may be. That is the plan that is done under the prescript of this bill. But who then ultimately gets to put in the offer, make the necessary to acquire that land is not necessary. Well, it is not. Not in all cases. There may in fact be instances where rural development gets tossed, especially if we're talking about state land, for example, where state land needs to be released. So you could have other set of departments involved, but it certainly does not suggest that human settlements relinquishes or the agency abrogates its responsibility for land acquisition and land assembly. Something which I was hesitant to include in this presentation, and particularly because it comes after the annual report, but perhaps because it's after the annual report, let me put it out to you. And again, this has not been because we don't have the bill, but the previous iterations of IDPs and SDFs, may suggest, and let me sketch the picture or the scenario. Land is acquired, and acquired fairly cheaply on the fringes of towns and cities. We know that. In many, if not all instances, it contradicts what we're saying in the Housing Code, what we're saying in BFG, what is being said in the DFA about compact and efficient cities. Therein lies probably one of the biggest tests for us as a human settlements department. You'll recall in the presentation made this morning, there was the list of expenditure of sites and of units, but then there was also the third slide of those other items, land. If this thing, or when this bill comes into its own, when spatial development frameworks get prepared, when land use schemes get prepared, those pieces are going to begin to dictate where land is to be acquired. Now, follow the logic here. If we're saying what if land is to be, if we're talking about spatially efficient and compact cities, we are, not in all instances, but in the majority of instances, talking about land that is well located in terms of infrastructure, in terms of public amenities, in terms of income generation opportunities, etc., etc. By implication, land that costs a whole lot more. You can see where I'm going with this argument. So it brings us back to the conversation that we've been having with you, that in fact you're asking us every year, well, you're getting more money, but we're getting less bang for our buck. Can you see where I'm going with this aspect? That once this bill begins to prescribe, or sorry, not the bill itself, but where the IDP, where the SEF, where those things begin to dictate our efforts around where land and probably the more expensive parcels of land get to be acquired, it's going to have an implication on the our ability to deliver in terms of shelter particularly. So I leave that as some food for thought. One last point, or two. I'll go do some another read around the inclusionary housing, but I can recall having this conversation with a colleague. It's Section 8, which previously talked about inclusionary housing, but it's been the issue there is around the minister, and it's not only our minister, but any other minister that can prescribe norms and standards around programs that are important for us as a department. So the implication will be, if it talks about integration or inclusionary housing in this instance, it could talk about typology. So we could in fact say, by way of example, that in any specific area, we cannot limit the HSDG to single story. It will be multiple story, it will be mixed use in specific areas. So while it may have been the term inclusionary housing may have been deleted, the section talks very specifically about our ability to actively engage rural development in the prescription of, or the prescript of norms and standards for what we term to be priority. Last point. And this is just to confirm what the Chair is saying. We as a department, nationally and particularly provincially, cannot engage municipalities at the tail end of the production of IEPs, of spatial development frameworks and of SDFs. We cannot. And I think there's not, I know that the ball is very, very particular around the active role that provincial and national government, but particularly provincial government, needs to play in the crafting of those local plans. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Right. Just, can I just ask, I'm not terribly clear now where we can go from here. And, you know, if we're talking about maybe, you know, this, I mean, we've only got a few more weeks left here. So if you're talking about this having to be passed before we close, it means that if we are going to, you know, I just want to know, where are we actually going to align ourselves to work through this book? So that we don't just enter, I mean, this is not really dealing with the bill, you know, this is giving us a broad perspective on it. And it's in the detail, you know, the devil's in the detail, you know they're saying. And these many things that we've been raising here for our own human settlements department section committee. So where do we go from here?
No, what I'm going to do now, as I'm saying, I'm going to meet with the chairperson of rural development, and then I'll brief him that at least we have managed to have this opportunity to have a briefing from the department, and then maybe we can join them when they are doing considering the bill, and then we can maybe we can reschedule our program to be part of them on there's only one session. No, already, the tail end. They can pass it even tomorrow. They can adopt it as a committee even tomorrow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm happy the question has been asked because I was also wondering as to what are we then expected to do after this presentation. And also, hearing that I think the whole process is quite advanced, as you say yourself, the bill can be passed any day from now. Unfortunately, you know, one has not had time to go through the documents, but I was looking at this one, which is a briefing note on the special planning and land use management bill by the department. And just looking through very quickly, I see actually that the department has been participating at various levels with regard to coming up with this bill. It's been a long time, isn't it? Yeah. Now, I just wanted to have an idea from the department as to, you see, because usually laws like this, you see, there is quite a lot of consultation, not only among departments, but also with the affected communities and so on and so forth, all those who have an interest in the bill. I wanted to find out whether you have any idea as to what the reaction of the affected communities, affected sectors, is, you know, towards this bill. Maybe not detailed, but just to say how acceptable, what are the possibilities, is it going to be implementable, and so on and so forth. How do they react during the consultation period, if there was?
I think the best people to answer that would be the department. I mean, you know, just going forward, I think, you know, I mean, what you might want to do is, like you said, have a discussion and then perhaps have Rural Development Department brief the committee.
Yeah.
You know, that would actually be one of the sort of maybe sort of urgent to-do items.
No. All right.
Thank you very much, Trevor, and Anton, and all other members, and I could see that we've got a lot of observers who are... Your presence is being appreciated. Thank you very much. The meeting has adjourned.